Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Murder in the Morning from the Hidden Killers Podcast.
So the evidence, as we know it to be thus far, pretty damning in the case against Brian Koberger. I think most people would look at this and go, yeah, kind of open and shut, but is it? Is it? The job of Ann Taylor is to poke holes in this. That's the attorney for Brian Koberger. And, you know, she does a pretty good job at doing just that. As we've been seeing recently in this case, of course, if you're just catching up, Brian Koberger, the man accused of murdering the 4 University of Idaho college students almost two years ago in Moscow, Idaho. The defense, bringing to light in pretrial hearings, challenges related to cell phone data collection and record keeping. The cell phone analyst, Cy Ray, expected to testify as an expert witness at the trial, expressed concerns about the accuracy and organization of evidence provided by law enforcement. A pretrial hearing in the case against Brian Koberger, the graduate student accused of fatally stabbing the University of Idaho students, revealed significant challenges related to this. And have a lot of concerns about the accuracy and that organization. Ray, a former police detective from Arizona, typically serves as an expert witness for prosecutors in a criminal case. However, his testimony in this case has raised eyebrows because it actually is kind of going towards the defense. What's your thoughts on this thus far?
I think it's a catastrophe. I think there's so much wrong with this case that by the time it gets into a courtroom, there's not going to be a case left, is what it feels like. Does it feel that way to you?
Well, I mean, that's the reality of so many things, and people don't realize it, that a lot of the trial itself happens before the trial. It happens in pretrial hearings. These are the things where everything gets parsed out, and it's like the dress rehearsals. Okay, let's go through this scene here, basically, and let's parse out what's going to make it to the actual trial to go in front of the jury. And that's exactly what's happening. And I got to say, I've watched some of this. I've taken a look at some of the testimony that's come out. And, you know, Ann Taylor's doing a good job. The things that she's pointing out will certainly look questionable to a jury. But in reality, are they all that questionable? I guess that's up for them to decide.
You know, and my concern is this is such an important case. How are there mistakes already being made in it?
Here's the thing. At the beginning of this case, everyone was going, including myself, were going nuts at Moscow PD because it seemed like it was fucking Keystone police here, Keystone cops going at this. And it turned out they actually really had their shit together at the end. We all ate crow and we're like, oh, shit, they actually did have quite a lot of leads. They just kept their mouth shut and not a lot leaked out. So good on them. We on the outside that were analyzing this and Monday morning quarterbacking it had it wrong. But we are still talking about a very small police force. We're talking about a police force that does not have a lot of experience in death investigations or homicide investigations. It was like the first one in many, many, many years when this took place. So as far as their protocols and data collection regarding cell phone records and things like that, I'm not a technical person, so it's hard for me to criticize because this could just be a lot of BS coming out of the defense of Brian Koberger. Or, you know, it's not incredibly crazy to think that, you know, maybe they're not just the greatest at that because they're not really equipped or used to doing that sort of investigative type work. I could be wrong, but could we find some errors in here? Yeah, I mean, we find that in cases where investigative teams have tons of experience. People are prone to making errors, but are those errors something that really truly question the guilt or innocence of Koberger, or are they things where one can really make a big stink out of and make it look like something far greater than it actually is?
Do you remember where we are on the sheath, the knife sheath?
Yeah, I mean, his DNA is on the knife sheath.
Well, to me, that's a huge freaking problem. It was left at the scene.
Yes.
What was it doing there? I mean, yes, they said there were parties there and things like that. So there was a lot of DNA there. But as we know from a lot of the experts who've been on with us, DNA is really very specific.
It is. And the analysis, the different types that have been done on these things thus far, it proves it to that it's his DNA there beyond a question of a doubt. As far as how it got there, that is the other question. Is it because he used the knife sheath to commit these murders? Did he somehow get his DNA on in some other way, shape, or form? Because there's not a lot of DNA otherwise that seems to have been collected. There has been some other male DNA collected around the house. It was a party house, though, so you're going to find other DNA around. You'll probably find, if you really wanted to, a lot of DNA around that house of other males. It doesn't mean anything that necessarily has anything to do with the murder, because, you know, it could be on, you know, the kitchen sink, turning the faucet on and off. It could be on anything, really, because people come and go. But if you're talking about things that are key to the case, like the knife sheath, and the DNA that's on it, and it points to the person that seems to have no real legit alibi and seems to have what we can understand, I mean, a weird motive on this and very questionable behavior leading up to this, that really points in the direction of probably who it is.
It really does.
Oh. Let's take a listen to this. This is Ann Taylor questioning phone data initially. Location data on the phone that they're missing some of it. Let's hear what they have
to say. You just told us that you think we have most of it, but there's some significant parts that are missing.
Yeah, and I want to qualify that just so it's really clear, because I understand it's starting to get very technical. There's over 500,000 lines of data that was turned over. So I'll make it clear, there's a lot of data that has been produced. I would say, in my opinion, looking at what's been produced, probably 2-3% is missing. But it's not the amount of data or the time of the data. It's the locations of the data. Some of the most significant locations in this case, we're missing some data.
Those significant locations, have they been depicted or captured on the CAS draft report?
They have.
And tell me what those locations are. What are we missing?
I am unable to find any measurements along, I believe it's 270, the Moscow-Pullman Road. If you drove the most direct route from Pullman to Moscow or vice versa, pretty much as soon as you're leaving Pullman to the time that you arrive in Moscow, we are missing that entire stretch. And if there's ever been a case that we need to look at, what does it look like when a phone travels from Pullman to Moscow? This is probably the case. We have the neighborhood around the crime scene, but we don't have the crime scene. Normally, that wouldn't be too terribly significant, because if it's a flat area, there's not a lot of vegetation or mountains. You could probably interpret the same. The location of this crime scene is very unique because it sits on a mountain. Part of it is shielded by a mountain. There's a lot of other big, thick, dense apartment buildings there. Your phone is going to behave differently inside of that residence than it might on the road behind the residence or in front of the residence. I can't find any drive test data that actually encapsulates any part of the property.
This is something where they're going to need some experts to go in and play with cell phones and see exactly what they can find out. Although we're talking 2 years ago, we're talking cell phone towers that have been updated. So exactly what they find today is not going to be very evidentiary of what things were like at that point in time. We're talking about signal getting back to the cell carrier of location of where someone was. And there's question here. Ann Taylor's pointing out, like, there's little gaps in this that shouldn't necessarily be there. But I mean, shouldn't is one thing. But are they, and it makes sense why, because of just signal coverage? Yeah, it actually kind of does. It's not really that questionable about where the location is and how coverage can be spotty at times. That's not a crazy concept, I guess.
Well, and again, you know, what are we looking at here? There's another hearing, what, August 29th, we don't have a trial date. We don't, I mean, this is, yeah, I understand you have to prepare for a court case, but are we ever going to see this man on the stand? We're following a lot of cases like that. You know, Corey Richens, when's that going to take place?
No, they're all going to take place, but they have to go through all of these steps to determine, you know, how this trial is going to go. And at some point, I mean, it's not unheard of where if they parse a lot of the stuff out in pretrial hearings, that this ends up being a plea bargain. Ann Taylor at some point may have to go to Brian Koberger and say, look, we have all this. They have all this against us. The odds of you making this work and getting acquitted are pretty low versus mm-hmm. some sort of a plea deal. And your life is on the line here. We can probably at least spare your life. But she may feel at the end of the day, after all of these hearings have taken place, that there is a strong enough case. Right now, I believe she thinks there is to take this to trial. But this is what the pretrial hearings are all about, to parse that stuff out so they don't get to a trial. And then it's just completely a blowout. And it clearly shows that someone is guilty and someone is not. They're trying to determine if there's any question to any of this, if they're going to put Koberger through an actual trial and the families through a trial and all of that. But it doesn't move fast, without a doubt. It does not move fast. Here's more from Ann Taylor. This is where she's questioning again. More the evidence, video evidence that she claims she does not have is in the hands of the prosecution, or at the very least in the hands of the authorities. Let's take a listen.
I want to talk a little bit more about the video and what's been turned over and what hasn't been turned over to us. And I want to focus a little bit on South US 95. Do you recall that south of Moscow on US 95 is the path that you put in your search warrant and affidavit alleging that Brian Koberger left Moscow going south on US 95?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And are you aware that one of the videos that you gave us, the coffee shop there on South 95, that leaving Moscow, you have to pass that covers 5 a.m. to 6 a.m.?
I do not recall the time frame. Yeah.
And so the time frame in these videos would matter, right?
Certainly.
The time frame in the videos to be meaningful would need to cover a time that surrounds the allegations against Mr. Koberger. Is that fair to say?
You could say that, yes.
Okay. And are you aware that Wasankari Construction had a video, and that also has a very limited time frame, like 5 a.m., just 1 hour of video also?
Sounds vaguely familiar, yes.
And that's also south on Highway 95, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
And the one we talked about today, Monday's Machine, that nobody can find, that clearly was given to Moscow Police Department, that's also south on 95.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I understand that you had a lot of help on canvassing and collecting things. There was a lot to do. But as the lead agent and the lead department, is there some kind of inventory of these videos, like a general inventory that would help me know what you have and why you don't have the relevant time frames?
The inventory that would be most useful to you is the inventory of evidence that has been booked into the Moscow Police Department. That's the inventory.
And I did come see the evidence. That's fair. I did come see the evidence. We didn't watch videos together, though, did we?
No, ma'am.
And would you agree that that evidence is on thumb drives with stickies on papers that tell us different things, but not like an inventory of what's on each thumb drive?
I am not aware of an inventory of each individual thumb drive.
Okay. So for us to do that together would take some days to inventory it all together. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
And that's my best way to try to find this Monday's Machine.
Sure.
And Wasankari Construction.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. That's it. Thanks.
I've never really been a very sympathetic to the defense on this, but look, if she doesn't have the information and the data and it's there, she is. They need to give that to her. Because the last thing we want is some technicality because somebody dropped the fucking ball and then they could all be appellate issues. Every time somebody drops the ball on this, there will be appellate issues on it. So let's not let that happen. Let's go through this trial. Let's get it done right the first time so these families don't have to suffer even longer than they already are, where this all being up in the air, and do it correctly. So she's been saying for a while, we don't have this. We don't have this. And now she's being specific. We don't have this, and you know you have it. Okay, well, we can figure it out here. So, yeah, she shouldn't have to go that far to push just to get basic shit, quite honestly.
No, and it kind of feels like, oh, you just got caught, so now you're going to hand it over.
Yeah.
You know, you've had it this whole time, but now that she figured out, wait a minute, I don't have this. You have it. I should have it. Oh, yeah. Okay. You can have it
and
now.
And maybe it's just
a minute.
Yeah. Maybe it's just a fuck up. Maybe it's just a who. I don't know. I'm not going to try and make excuses, but it certainly is something where let's be on the up and up on this on every side, because you don't want appellate issues. And if there's nothing to hide, there's nothing to hide. We're at the end of the day, we are interested in justice for this case. And if that's Brian Koberger that goes down because he did it, then it's Brian Koberger. If there's some reason or something that we're not seeing, then we should see that too. If it exonerates him in some way, shape, or form. I don't believe there's anything that's out there. I really, truly think she's just kind of parsing everything she can because that's her job. But if there is something that needs to be seen that has not, they should be able to see it. That's how this works. So
that's how it's supposed to work.
In theory. Again, I'm guessing Ann Taylor is doing her job and she is making mountains out of molehills. But she needs to have the molehills to take a look at first. Otherwise, she will make a mountain out of them. So give her the fucking molehills. And then let this thing continue on.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advance access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.